settlements on both sides of the wall, and you can see here a new settlement that's starting right there. If you want to photograph it, that's what they call an outpost. So it starts with the outposts like this, and then it expands to become a full-fledged settlement.
And this area here, this is all Palestinian. Is this area?
Well, all the areas are Palestinian. It's a matter of whether they were stolen or not. I'm taking you on a safari.
This is the scenic tour.
Yeah. We'll come back through the paved road. But the reason I like to come here is we published like 6 research papers on this area. And we designated it as a new protected area. And it's the only remaining green area in Bethlehem, in the Bethlehem district. But this is considered Israeli parlance as Area C, which is subject to Israeli civil and military control.
And in the valley beneath us, there are all these terraces, stone terraces and olive trees. Do Palestinians come here and gather or forage for plants?
Yes. Our ancestors built these terraces over thousands of years. Some of them 100 years old, some are 3,000 years old. You see, this is part of the Fertile Crescent where humans first developed agriculture. So first domestication of animals and plants happened here.
Not in Mesopotamia.
Well, Mesopotamia is part of the Fertile Crescent.
But we're far from Mesopotamia here in Palestine.
The reason it's called Fertile Crescent is it looks like a crescent. It starts in western Iran and Iraq. This is what you call Mesopotamia in the old colonial literature. And it goes to Bilad al-Sham, which is Syria, Lebanon, and South Turkey, and into Palestine. This crescent-shaped structure is where first human evidence of agriculture, domestication of animals and plants. Plants like wheat and see, for example, the wild wheat here and the wild barley still grows in places like this. He domesticated it. That is a settlement called Har Gilo. It took from both Bejala and the village of Al-Walaja. The village of Al-Walaja, you can see the mosque there. That's the Al-Walaja. Look at the gazelle.
There's a gazelle down there. Mazen Qumsiyeh, what impact does this place have on visitors, Palestinians, particularly young people and students? What do they get out of this and what's their impression?
This provides, describe it, and it's not just an oasis of calm, it's an oasis of hope, where people see the potential for protecting our environment, the potential for caring for each other, the potential for love, the potential for peace. The potential, this earth, by the way, planet Earth, has enough resources to feed everybody. We don't need wars and conflict. I mean, last night we woke at 2 in the morning, you and I, with these missiles and counter-missiles and stuff like Bethlehem over Jerusalem. There's no need for that. The Israeli military, by genocide in Gaza, produced more greenhouse gases in the past months than many European countries to damage the environment. I repeat that. The Israeli military alone in 6 months used emitting gases, petrol and stuff like that for jets, than many European countries produce in a whole year, with all their industry, all their cars, private cars, public transportation, everything else. The military is the biggest environmental threat to humanity. There's no reason for it, logical reason for it. We could have peace here in a heartbeat if there were not greedy people to be billionaires from their industrial complex, selling weapons, exploiting other people, and using religion and using the language of tribalism, like the Jewish people, to try and justify taking somebody else's land, property, ethnic cleansing us Palestinians. We, as I said, we Palestinians are indigenous people. We have been living here for thousands of years, regardless of religions that come and go, by the way. My family is Christian, for example. Before that, they may have been Jewish or pagan or whatever. They adopted Christianity. When Islam came here, most families adopted Islam. That's their choice, and they changed religion. And we have lived together, Muslim, Jews, Baha'i, Druze, everybody else. There's no reason why we cannot do that. The only thing stopping us is a foolish, stupid idea called political, which claims that a Jewish state, is good for the Jews. This is the claim. It's a false claim, of course. It's not good for the Jews. It's the worst thing that happened to Judaism in 2,000 years. And this is not my words that I just said. These are the words of who said this, and Ilan Pappe in his speech. So I think we have to realize it's not a good idea to have religions in charge of countries. No matter how good or bad these religions are, we cannot have religions in charge of countries or claim to religions to be in charge of countries. No, we can have a secular democratic country for all its people. It's very simple. It's present in many, many countries in the world.
And does this center give its visitors, its young Palestinian visitors particularly, hope and inspiration?
That's what I say. It's an oasis of peace, it's an oasis of hope, it's an oasis of conservation and environmental protection in the middle of mayhem and stupidity around us. This is why it's, for me, I'm very passionate about this institution, which my wife and I started with a group of volunteers, and it's really important.
So the Palestine Institute, this territory, this plot of land, 1 hectare, it's really small, it's beautiful, it's packed with leaves and fruits and vegetables, and there's a couple of hyenas and chickens and rabbits and fish and a hydroponics garden, and it's a marvelous to see nature blooming and to encourage it. Yeah. And it takes a lot of work to do that. But at the same time, your vision is really small in sustaining this plot of land, but the vision is much larger.
No, this land is a demonstrative farm and demonstrative site. It demonstrates possibility. You mentioned what am I going to do in Australia? I was invited to speak in Uganda and Egypt, and Jordan, telling them how to replicate this model, how to do it in their own country. So the idea of reaching out and replicating, already there are ideas in other countries. We were planning actually to do something similar to this in Gaza Strip before this war started. So it's really, as I said, it's replicable, it's doable in other countries.
Introduce yourself again, Mazen. Idea where we are. Where are we?
So, this is Mazen Qumsi. I'm professor at Bethlehem University, and we are in Al-Mahrur Valley, which is South Jerusalem Hills, surrounded by settlements. Jerusalem is now isolated from Bethlehem. I live in the Bethlehem district, in the Bethlehem area, but I cannot go to Jerusalem because it is now as a Palestinian Christian, not open to us. It's when only Jews from around the world.
War destroyed.
What's here?
Yeah.
So what's the history of Battir? Battir goes back to Maanitic habitation, maybe earlier, because we also saw dwellings going back to the Bronze Age and Iron Age, before the invention of writing and before we have any evidence of so-called civilizations, before agriculture, hunter-gatherers, and even before the Iron and Bronze Age. We have the Stone Age, we have Homo erectus here, stones from Homo erectus. You know, humans came out of Africa to the rest of the world through waves of migration through Palestine.
And here we're coming into Battir.
Yeah. So Battir is an ancient community of Palestinians, of people here, indigenous people. The more modern era of Battir, we know that it has always, for thousands of years, depended on agriculture. So the past 200 years also, agriculture. Eight large hamulas, we now have more than one subfamily under them. And those people have this land that they used to till. Most of the farming here is done by women. So the way they do here, and then they distribute it to one family a day. So one family a day gets the water. So the Battiri week is actually days, because there are eight families and the rotation goes, right? So for example, let's say this plot belongs to one family, so whatever they have ways that they can cut off. Before even Israel was created in the 1920s, when they had the beginning of the British mandate here, the Zionists started, with the help of the British, taking over Palestinian, diverting the water of the Jordan River and other things. They realized that the water is a strategic asset. No life for the indigenous people without water. So they basically started also taking the springs after 1967, when they occupied this area. But because this particular spring, you can see, is surrounded by Palestinian houses, and this village was then they were forced to let the people keep their water. That's why they enjoy swimming and water for their fields and things like that. In the 1948 period, when in April 1948, occurred a lot of people in West Jerusalem, a lot of villagers, and ethnic cleansed most of those villages, including Deir Yassin, Liftau, all these areas that are now in what's called West Jerusalem, Jewish West Jerusalem. They ethnically cleansed all of those, and this village, its people also left the village in April 1948. And they went to Bethlehem. They were afraid because of that. So there was an educated person here who's like a mukhtar, or head of the village council. His name is Hassan Mustafa. And Hassan Mustafa, he went to the place where the refugees were sitting, and he said to them, look, you should come back to the village, because if we leave, take it over. And we cannot allow them to take it over. And the military is still not there. The military was on top of that hill there. So he didn't manage to convince very many. He convinced like maybe a dozen young people. And he was himself young. He was in his early 30s when this happened. And so he brought these 12 people to the village, and what they did is they, each evening, they would light up village house, not electricity, of course, at the time, it's kerosene lamps. So they would light up all the houses in the village, and they would turn radios on, things like that, and make it look like the village is populated and defended even. With dummies and stuff like that. And the soldiers up on that hill would think that this village is not conquered yet. So as he would send those young people and say, look, we've been in the village for 10 days, nothing happened, 12 days, 2 weeks. Slowly the villagers started coming back. By the 3rd of May 15, 1948, this village was largely repopulated people who left it. And so then the Israeli military wanted to draw borders. So obviously that's what they meant, because Israeli commander and a young commander by the name of Yitzhak Rabin came and met with this village head, Hassan Mustafa. And he said, what do you want? And Hassan Mustafa said, well, what do you mean, what do I want? I want to live in my land, and this is my land, and this is our village land. And the Israeli commander said to him, well, we need the railroad, and the railroad passed through your village. He said, well, I don't care. You know, the railroad has never been molested before and will never be molested. But we have to be able to cross the railroad to get to our land on the other side of So they actually drew the maps in Rhodes in 1949 and incorporated between Israel and Jordan for ceasefire, not a peace agreement then. It was a ceasefire agreement. So Mustafa is looked at as a hero of this village, actually have saved the village. Because its fate would have been similar to the village of Al-Walaja, which was at Lifta, which had a beautiful spring. Lifta would be exactly like this, but you go now there in Lifta and West Jerusalem, it's ruined. Israel depopulated.
Tell me about the pine trees on that side. It's all pine trees.
Yeah,
and here it's biodiversity, and here it's monoculture.
So that's what colonizers do. They basically they destroy human diversity. You want to create a Jewish state with European trees, pine trees. I mean, you can see pine trees here, but there's two pine trees. There's actually three different species of local pine trees. You can see them there. Well, Israel destroyed all these villages on the other side of the Green Wall. They leveled all these trees, whether domestic trees like you know, figs and almonds and olives, or wild trees like carobs and hawthorn and things like that. And in place of this agro-biodiversity, they planted the monoculture of Pinus halepensis, European pine.
Last question, how can people help? What can people do to help?
Go to our website, palestinenature.org. You can either volunteer in-kind donations, books, material, specimens. You can donate your time, obviously, whether here you can come as did and spend time with us. We provide with volunteers here with room and board, so it's nice and comfortable. Or they cash if they wish to. Also on our website you can find the
tabs for volunteering and donating and everything else. Spreading the word is very important. If you don't volunteer or you don't donate, networking and connecting us with others. If you know people in Australia or New Zealand, South America, going next at the end of the year is a possibility to help us networking people. Thanks. Thank you.
What are we doing here?
So you have to plant those seeds in this bed, but we have to weed it first.
Okay.
So I've been digging it, you can see. And then Jesse or you, with the milder form, can pick up those weeds and stuff. But sometimes...
What seeds are we planting?
This is a cucumber, snake cucumber.
It's traditional Palestinian?
Yeah, cucumber. So, I need to take out the stones that are here too. So,
okay, so...
You want to plant, which do you want?
I want to do both. Can I do both?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Can I dig and plant and remove stones?
Yes, let's do it. Well, we have to divide the work. I only have one pickaxe. So, why don't you start by digging? Because I've been digging and I'm exhausted. I want to go weed a little. And then we switch.
Do you get exhausted?
Yes. I'm an old man. What can I tell you?
So why don't you let me do this heavy stuff?
Okay. Now if you get some soil with it, you can put it back.
Learn more about the Palestine Institute for Biodiversity and Sustainability and Associated Palestine Museum of Natural History. Go to greenplanetmonitor.net, link to the Institute's website. That's it for today's special edition of the GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in Palestine. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, the guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your fabulous instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg, over and out for now.
This is JET, Canada's own racism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Racism is an ongoing... How will you help?
I will always be given these bigotry and hatred when I see them.
I will put my passion into action. I will stand against racist words and action and speak out against hate when I see it. Hate has no place in Canada.
I will continue to honor, express, and promote my Indigenous culture.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus, British Columbia.
Yeah.